Hello, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the PewPro Podcast. If you follow the fintech industry, you are constantly being bombarded by press releases and investment deals all the time. And it's really, really hard to keep track of something that even happened a week ago. That's why I'm joined by James Booth today to discuss the stories that we found the most interesting from the last couple of weeks. So, welcome to the PewPro Podcast. This is going to be our first of a hopefully bi-weekly series of roundup of the fintech news. I'm joined this week by James Booth. James, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
What are some interesting stories that you have for the last couple of weeks?
To be honest, I think the biggest story on our side is the fact that it's actually cooled down in London. I think last night I probably had one of the warmest sleeps I've ever had in my life. It was, 38 degrees, I think, in London.
Okay, and what is that in real temperatures?
What do you mean, in Fahrenheit?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to Google that. 38.
It's like, what, 104?
Yeah, I think it's almost like 100.
100, okay.
100.4. So, yeah, it was pretty extreme. London's not built for that. But,
no.
I think rather than going down the weather route, let's stick to the actual topics on hand.
All right.
I think there's been quite a bit going on in the news recently. Obviously, we did a bit of a roundup here, and I'm reading through some of the notes. I think one of the interesting things that I clocked in the news was mobile payment app Payconiq is looking to expand into Europe. So for those of you that don't know, Payconiq's a Dutch mobile app launched by the Dutch bank ING. I think primarily it was focused on peer-to-peer payments, but I think with most of these apps, that's how they're really getting into market. So similar to Venmo in the US, where really starting to gain consumer traction through peer-to-peer payments. And they've just announced that now they're starting to really expand throughout Europe. So last year they merged, or actually they got acquired by Bankcontact. So now it's really Bankcontact Payconiq. It was very, very strong in Benelux, but now they're expanding throughout Europe and they really are going after Visa and MasterCard at the moment. So I think that's very interesting news. I mean, it's something we've seen happening all around the world, and especially in Europe. But I think they're positioned quite well because they already have quite a strong user base, a pretty slick app, and it's going to be interesting to see how they roll out.
Excellent. And Bankcontact is a bank transfer payment method, correct, in Belgium, which is a good segue towards our next topic here, which is Swift and Fast. Swift is obviously the interbank messaging system, how you transfer funds around the world. And what they've done lately is they've been working on integrating their API into other local instant bank transfer schemes. And most recently, they did this in Singapore with their own scheme called Fast.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing this pop up again all over the place. And it's pretty interesting that they're actually starting to see real use cases. I mean, in the UK, we've had faster payments. There's this kind of separate instant payments throughout the EU. I know Australia has their own scheme. The US is also building out their own kind of faster payments or instant payments type scheme. So it's interesting that Swift's really got something off the ground, because I think everybody's been out there trying to replace Swift. I mean, I think their old infrastructure was not enough to keep up with the rapid pace of change. So it's good that they're actually able to compete. Otherwise, I think all of the fintechs out there would have just begun circumnavigating them.
Yeah, and it looks like they've brought their time down from 12 hours to 12 seconds, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is pretty incredible.
Which is incredible. I mean, it's a good start, but I still think they've got a lot of work to do. It's still going to be a massive uphill battle, because it's great that they got one corridor up and running. But when you look at global sort of interbank transfers, it's an extremely complicated cobweb of connections. So getting one is great, but they're going to have to replicate that amongst thousands of banks. Because if you think about each bank on an end-to-end point is going to have to support this new Swift GPI instant sort of messaging protocol. To be honest, I'm not that technical, so I don't know the actual details, but I know each bank will have to support it. And if you look at how SEPA, instant credit transfers, rolled out in the EU, I mean, it got announced years ago, and it's been promised throughout the European Union, but still the majority of the banks still can't even support that protocol. So now SWIFT is trying to replicate that on a global basis, which is cool, it's great. I think all of the fintech apps need it. But it's going to be interesting to see whether something else takes their place, something like a blockchain-based payment scheme or a payment method or one of the other sort of fintech rails out there that are being built.
Well, I'm really glad you brought up the blockchain thing because this is, again, another beautiful segue, James. So let's talk about Libra. Let's talk about Facebook. How do you feel about this? So basically, Facebook has come out and said they're going to be creating a new currency, cryptocurrency that's not really a cryptocurrency. It's a stable coin, but it's not really a stable coin. So Facebook has decided that they already know everything about your personal life, and now they would like to know more about your financial life.
I mean, I think it's a very... I mean, I think fundamentally, it's very good. I think we need to see more fintechs starting their own kind of sort of challenger rails. It's inherently good. However, I think Facebook's timing is just extremely poor. I mean, when looking at new financial products, yes, you need the right tech. You need a good brand behind it to distribute it. You need a big consumer base. And Facebook have all of that. So I think they've got the clout to be able to launch something like this. They've also got the right partners. If you look at the Libra network and all of the various stakeholders that they're building in the network, it's great. They've got a lot of backing. But it's probably just the wrong time to do it. I think they're still struggling from... they're struggling off the back of the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal. I don't think consumers still completely... trust Facebook. I mean, consumers are quite fickle to begin with. We get over things pretty quickly. I mean, whenever there's banking fines with, the large sort of corporate banks, people don't run on the bank. They still trust them. They still keep their money with them. However, I think in fintech, it's a completely different ballgame because you're starting off with a fresh new relationship, and I don't see them succeeding anytime soon. I think they're going to have to push this for a long time. I think they've still got years ahead of them before they see any traction behind this.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of my information about Libra from a really fantastic article on The Verge, which I will link to in the show notes.
Yeah.
And basically, one of the concerns is that no one trusts Facebook, and probably rightly so. They got a $5 billion fine a couple weeks ago. apparently, though, their stock price actually went up because of this, because it wasn't a big enough fine to do any damage to them, which is also really quite incredible.
I think for them, there's no such thing as bad news, probably. They're just getting more exposure at this point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably their next fine will be paid for in Libra, but we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, this weekend, I'm actually looking forward to... I got a notification this week on my Netflix app saying there's a new documentary that fits my liking. I need to watch it, and it's called The Great Hack. And it's a new Netflix documentary, and it explores how... I'm just reading off my app now. Explore how the data company named Cambridge Analytica came to symbolize the dark side of social media in the wake of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. So that got launched on Netflix a few days ago. So you can see there's still a lot of, let's say, negative press that's going to come out towards Cambridge Analytica and Facebook as a whole. So trying to launch a financial product at the same time is pretty ambitious. But I guess if anybody can do it, it would be a behemoth like Facebook.
Absolutely. And one of the ending notes in this Verge article was the fact that the CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, was talking about blockchain technology. So there could theoretically be a Starbucks eventually as a cryptocurrency, which also would make fairly good sense because people tend to trust Starbucks more than they trust Facebook. And also just the absolute, there's so many Starbucks. There's more Starbucks than there are bank branches, right? So it might fit into their plans.
Well, I think the trump card that Libra have at this point in time is the partner network that they've already built. Because obviously, they're designing Libra to just be the rails, to just be the communication rails. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a wallet on either side of the transaction to store value and to also to insert value into the Libra network. And the names there are unbelievable. I mean, you've got Visa and MasterCard, firstly, who are card brands. Companies like PayU, PayPal, Coinbase even. I mean, they're a cryptocurrency wallet. Spotify, eBay, Stripe, Lyft, Vodafone, sort of booking.com, Farfetch. I mean, these are huge names. So if they're going to be backing Libra, I think at the end of the day, most of us will probably end up using Libra and not realize it's actually Libra, because you'll be paying through eBay, but it's just going to be, you're going to load an eBay wallet. You think it's eBay wallet, but actually the rails behind it is Libra. So that's pretty impressive.
The other interesting thing about Libra and Facebook is, with this kind of information that they would have, your financial information, and the partners involved, they could then manipulate the prices of products online, knowing your exact pain point.
Yeah, I mean, they could, and they probably want to. But I think that's when governments will step in and start to regulate them. I don't see a Western government putting up with activity like that. I mean, it's already happening in China, for example, with WeChat Pay and Alipay in certain cities, where the whole social credit score system's in place to a certain degree. And yeah, if that type of activity starts happening within this network, it's dead in the water. I mean, they would be completely crazy to think about using this type of financial data mixed with social data at this point in time.
We'll see. I'm sure this will happen. I can't imagine any Western government staying up to it. I know, yeah.
Although I did laugh earlier on this week, going back to the start of the podcast, when I was talking about the heat wave that we've recently had in Britain, there's some really funny photos on Twitter of individuals on trains who have literally taken their shirts off, and they've kind of hung their shirts on a Southwestern Railway train, and they're sitting there working without a shirt on. And there was this one photo, I can't remember who posted it, I can look at it afterwards, and he said, we need the sort of social scoring system now, because he would immediately lose 500 points for doing something like that.
Yeah, we'll also put them in the show notes. Have to send that over to me, James.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let's move on from Facebook and talk more about Facebook. WhatsApp will be launching their payment method later this year, it seems, in India. This would be yet another e-wallet in India, but the interesting thing about WhatsApp is that it's one of the most popular messaging apps in India, with over 400 million users. And this is a huge market opportunity. India seems to be the next China in terms of e-wallets and fintech. And with this massive, massive user base, it would almost overnight become one of the biggest wallets in India.
Yeah. I mean, I think Facebook and WhatsApp have wanted to capture the Indian market for years now. I mean, I've heard whispers of WhatsApp Pay being launched in India for quite some time. I think the regulatory hoops that they've had to jump through in India have been quite significant. I think doing business in India from a financial perspective is tricky enough. And all of the on-soil requirements, sort of data localization rules, et cetera, is quite intense. So it's a good thing that they've got that all done, and it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. I wonder what will happen to WhatsApp if they get traction. Because, I mean, WhatsApp, it's at the moment, it's just a messaging app. It's not completely integrated into all of the social elements of Facebook. And if you compare it to what they're trying to compete against, or what they're trying to recreate, you look at the mega super apps of WeChat Pay and Alipay. Those are really integrated services. So it's going to be interesting to see if they change that in India, and they start introducing different services and integrating different services into WhatsApp to take advantage of the payment functionality.
Yeah, I find it really fascinating that so many of the famous e-wallets like Alipay and WeChat originally started as messaging apps. And that seems to be the best way to actually get a user base and then subtly, I guess, over time, introduce e-commerce.
Yeah, I mean, there's two strategies out there that I think these companies are taking. There's the chat, the messaging chat app strategy, which WhatsApp is taking and WeChat has taken. Then there's the kind of peer-to-peer type payment strategy. So that's, let's say, the more Western approach, where you have Venmos that primarily just aimed at, okay, let's see how we can facilitate a pure peer-to-peer transaction, remove cash from that type of equation, and then once you've got them hooked into the network and once you have a lot of friends just exchanging small amounts, you plug in e-commerce functionality. So we're starting to see that with Venmo in the US. Now you're able to pay your Uber via Venmo. And what I would anticipate is QR functionality coming down the road. I'm sure we'll see QR codes everywhere and basically be able to plug that into any type of app. So it's about just about grabbing as much of the consumer market as possible, no matter how you do it.
Yeah, and on that note, the US has a new e-wallet, this time from LG, the phone company. Yes, joining the ranks of Google Pay, Apple Pay, and Samsung Pay. To me, I find this a little bit mystifying that LG would attempt to do this. They have approximately 10% of the US market. The e-wallet will only be available on the newest phone model that they have out. And the U.S. simply isn't a major market for e-wallets. It only has 3% of the total e-wallet usage. That's compared to China, that has a 36%. What do you think about this? This, to me, seems like a mystifying step.
Yeah, I think it's, I can't really lock it down. It just seems that they're just trying to stay relevant. I mean, I don't blame them for doing something like this. I think maybe part of it has actually got to do with marketing, because I don't see them taking any part of the wallet landscape within the US. I think the dominant wallets have already been established. But in parallel to that, I think it's good that there's always competition. I think the market needs to stay fragmented. You don't want a monopoly or a duopoly being created. So it's good, but I think it's not really going to cause ripples throughout the ecosystem. It's kind of they're just probably just trying to stay relevant and make sure they're kind of the small player at the back saying, I'm still here, remember me.
Yeah, precisely.
But moving on from here, I mean, some other interesting things I came across in the past week was this one article that popped up about voice-activated payments. So e-wallets are definitely the future of bank accounts. They're the future of paying. They really will be interconnected systems that are going to make our lives much easier. But alongside that, I think voice-activated payments for microtransactions are going to become very interesting and very relevant in the near term. So this is something that I see happening in months, years, not several years. Certainly the rise of digital home assistants with Alexa, Siri, OK Google, etc. I mean, they're already penetrating our homes. And we've seen, according to this article, 60% of those polled told London-based online payment provider PaySafe Group that they would use voice-activated technology to pay for low-value goods. Now that's, I think, just the fact that 60% of consumers are open to the idea is a huge step compared to 2-3 years ago, where voice-activated payments were a complete dream and something that consumers probably just wouldn't trust. I think that's going to be super interesting, kind of ordering low value groceries off Ocado or off Amazon Fresh, kind of stuff like that is going to make our life so much easier with into web enabled fridges. Just order the milk. Cool. Say, Samsung fridge, buy a liter of milk and a loaf of bread, have it delivered to me tomorrow, approved payment. Thank you. That type of interaction, I think, is very cool.
I think even more surprising was that 10% of people have actually used their voice to buy things online.
I've kind of brushed over that part of the article. 10% today already. I mean, I use Alexa and Siri at home primarily for cooking timers and to ask for the weather. But I'm amazed that 10% use it already to purchase. I want to give it a go this weekend and probably figure out what service I can connect to my Sonos speaker with Alexa and see what I can buy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you'll have to let us know what you ended up buying on the next podcast.
Yeah, I'll let you know, yeah. Luckily, I don't have children at the moment, so they won't figure it out and just start buying everything. I guess they still need to figure that part out.
Okay, Should we go talk about Jack?
Yeah, I mean, let's end off on that. So Visa, obviously, like many of the payment networks, are going on a complete buying spree, and it's just not stopping. I'm amazed at the cadence that they're acquiring and investing in businesses. So they this past week invested in Indonesian payment ride-hailing app Gojek. And I think the part of the strategy there is similar to that of Payconiq, similar to that of WhatsApp in India. I mean, you're finding an application, some kind of product that has a huge consumer base, people that are loyal to the product, people that are using the product on a daily basis, and figuring out ways how to insert the various payment rails into that product, figuring out how to how to almost replace the current Visa MasterCard rails, because we all know it's going to happen. It's just a race to figure out, is it going to be an extremely interconnected mesh network of these products, or is one or two going to dominate each market? And I think they're just going around just investing in as many things as possible and hoping that some of them will pay off.
Yeah, you also see Grab in Asia with a very similar strategy as well. So it was also a ride-hailing app, and it has gradually transformed itself into a food delivery service and also a payment method.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we'll be integrating ourselves. So it's very interesting. I think it'll be the first payment method that we integrate that started off as a taxi hailing app. That's pretty cool.
James, thank you so much for helping me kick off this podcast. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thank you, Niall. I think this is it's a good initiative. I'm looking forward to having this chat every 2 weeks and building on top of this. This was fun.
Excellent. All right, then until next time. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you're enjoying it, make sure to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe on the podcatcher of your choice. If you'd like to stay up to date with PPRO, make sure to follow PPRO on social media at PPRO_payments. And if there are any news stories that you think we missed, make sure to send an email to podcast@ppro.com. The PPRO podcast only sounds good because of Andre Ratke. All right, until next time.